There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Good evening. You're listening to the Business Breakfast Nightcap, and I'm Malcolm Taylor. Coming up, we're going to hear from two tech startups who want to save you money. One of them is the founder of Groupon. Plus, we have the latest on a couple of big aviation stories, Fly Dubai's half-year results, and Emirates Airlines boss Tim Clark's views on battery-powered planes. But first, a local company that wants to save you money.
Tariq Sheikh is the founder and CEO of Postpay. So Postpay is launching in a couple of weeks. It's based in Dubai, down at DIFC, as part of the FinTech Hive Accelerator. And here's the deal. I will use Postpay to buy goods online, particularly fashion items, perhaps a new suit. But rather than clicking on it and paying for it instantly, for 1,000 dirhams, for example, I will be able to pay in four installments of 250 dirhams over a few weeks or months, and I will not pay a dirham in interest. That's the Postpay model. Other companies around the world are doing this, but you're the first ones to do it here in this part of the world. Why did you think this was a winner?
It's a fantastic, fantastic business model. It shifts the cost economics away from the customer. So we're entering a generational shift, right? We've got millennials who don't necessarily understand the complex dynamics of using credit cards, the APRs, and all the different terms. So what this does, it's extremely transparent. It favors the customer. The customer is at the core of our offering. And what it does is it moves this cost towards the retailer. The retailer justifies playing this because it boosts sales, it boosts conversion rates, it also increases the basket size, and it's a minimal spread. In addition to this, it's all done at no increased risk for the retailer.
So then this is the thing. I'm getting an interest-free loan to buy my 1,000 dirham suit.
Absolutely.
But the retailer will pay. Let's say it's at Massimo Dutti, Armani, Zara, whoever it is.
Right.
They will pay you.
They will pay us a marginal spread, and the marginal spread is not much more than retail would normally pay for the payment processing anyway. So if you think about the payment world as a value chain, we have captured a portion of that value chain, and that's where we make our money.
So you're just, what, 1-3%?
We're a couple. We'll call it a couple of spreads on top of the retail merchant normal spread.
It's single digits.
It's single digits. It's very, very small.
So you need to scale up.
We need to scale up, but if you think about the financial economics of this product, it's a six-week product. We don't change the timing. It's the first installment is immediately, and then the remaining installments are every fortnight. When you compound this couple of spread over a year, the annual spread is quite large.
If I was being unkind, I would say this is another Dubai tech startup that's kind of a copycat model for something that's happened elsewhere. In the way that Careem was a copycat of Google and Soup was a copycat of Amazon, that's not always a bad thing. The more generous way would be there is already proof of concept with this internationally. So tell me who's doing this globally and where, and what kind of success are they having?
So to that point, I would say you learn from your peers and you learn from best practice. And I think this business model has really proved itself in some of the other markets. We've seen a serious phenomenon that started in Australia with a couple of companies growing from there and spreading into the US. These companies now have market caps of about $6 and $5 billion. Another company from Europe as well has spread into the US. It's starting to go global, and we are the first player in the region. It's not a copycat model. It's a localization strategy. So we're really using, we use a lot of data that's localized. We have to understand the local customer, the local implications of data as well. So it's a very, very Dubai-based homegrown company.
You've signed up a number of big retailers here in the region, but you can't tell me who they are until you launch in a couple of weeks' time.
Exactly.
Can you give me a hint of what type of retailers they are? Are they all fashion, for example?
Yeah, so just very quickly on that, we do a credit risk profiling in a matter of split seconds on each of our customers. We cannot provide this type of solution for a product that's sellable on the gray market. So you can put all the electronics on one side. So we are really focused on fashion. We're focused on...
Because you think if it was smartphones, it could be open to fraud?
Well, it's more likely. So definitely, the way we build our algorithms, the way we build our rules, we try and avoid risk. So we mitigate as much risk and fraud as possible. It's a lot easier for me to buy the brand new iPhone and resell it on the gray market. It's not as easy for me to buy a red t-shirt in size medium and sell it again. So we look at the customer and we look at thousands of different data inputs, and we do a credit risk profiling.
You've got a blue chip background. You were a consultant with A.T. Kearney before this. You've got an MBA from, I forget which prestigious European business school.
That's how it is.
Yes. What made you think I am going to jack in a very good day job and do something which is high risk like this?
At the end of the day, it came down to wanting something a little bit more and trying to have an impact. I think consulting is a fantastic opportunity and it has a lot of impact in the region. I felt that, I took a year and I actually focused on investments in East Africa at some point. The reason it spun off to Postpay is because it was an incredible journey for me to start moving away from strategic and operational, roles and moving into actually fundraising.
Tarek, we'll have to leave it there. Best of luck with Postpay launching in a couple of weeks' time.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for having me.
The Business Breakfast Nightcap
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Good evening. You're listening to the Business Breakfast Nightcap. I am Malcolm Taylor. Circus, S-U-R-K-U-S, a brand new experiential marketing platform. Brand new in the UAE, at least. It's launching today, and we welcome to the studio the Circus founder and CEO, Stephen George. Good morning to you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thanks for coming in. Thanks for coming down from Abu Dhabi so early this morning.
Absolutely.
Circus hits the market here today. Explain what it does.
Circus is an experiential marketing platform. We really focus on the client needs of connecting and engaging with their true customers. And so we leverage experiences, we leverage events, offers, any type of engaging way that a brand is looking to connect with their customer audience.
Well, you made your money as the co-founder of Groupon, arguably the best known of all the daily deal sites that were up ultra pop for a number of years. What's the difference between a daily deal site and an experiential marketing platform?
So Groupon really focused, because of its kind of early and fast success, around the discount. And that's just one way you can engage customers for a brand or for a small business. And so we wanted to expand that because we found that, there's a lot of different initiatives that typical businesses are using for marketing and advertising. And so we really went beyond just one channel, which Groupon focused on.
I'm still not quite sure. You'll have to explain a bit more then. What is an experiential marketing platform?
Yeah, so experiential marketing as a concept is typically reserved for big brands. So you think of a brand like Samsung or Nike that's doing a big event. And that's an experience that they're putting on for, hundreds or thousands of customers or potential customers. We wanted to take that concept of leveraging an experience and leveraging an engaging, way to connect with a brand and bring that more accessible to small businesses. And so we developed the platform because we needed a way for small businesses to do constant, reoccurring engagement.
I mean, you've got around 750,000 users of the Circus app at the moment, and you've worked alongside some mega brands. You mentioned a couple there.
Yeah.
What do those brands get from partnering from you? And you mentioned they're engaging with consumers. Just explain that link.
Yeah, so typically a brand would hire a PR firm, influencer platform, market research firm. All that they have to spend money up front, and they're not really sure on what that success looks like. It's not built on performance, and so we wanted to build a business that's performance-based. So we leverage physical attendance, social amplification, feedback, customer insights, and we just say that our members are able to do those actions, right? They can show up to an event or they can walk into a business, they can post on social, they can fill out a survey or leave a review. And that gives them access to an experience, so an event or an offer that the business is able to host.
So am I just being a bit naive here? Is this just people loving getting something for free?
It's not about getting something for free. It's about the trillions of dollars being spent by businesses and brands globally on engaging with customers, but they're doing it in very inefficient ways because they're giving it to PR firms, they're giving it to market research firms, they're giving it to influencer platforms. They're not giving it directly to the end consumer, and that's the person that the brand is looking to connect with. And so we're just transferring those dollars from firms and giving direct to the end consumer.
So I've downloaded your app, Circus, and I'm looking at it now and some of the things it's recommended for me. I can get coffee and a dessert for two people any time today at a particular restaurant, I won't name it. And what I have to do is I have to do an Instagram post by tomorrow and a Google review by tomorrow. That's kind of the trade-off. It's free for, I get my coffee and dessert free, and I pay for it with the Google review and an Instagram post.
Yeah, because they would have had to hire an influencer platform to get the amount of social amplification that dozens or hundreds of individuals like yourself are going to do in exchange for that. So and it's really this value exchange.
How much are they paying you for that in ballpark terms? And I'm sure each one will be different, but in ballpark terms.
So our pricing is all performance-based. So it's based on conversion. So we're charging, just dirhams per every person that completes an action.
Right.
So very inexpensive. It's about 10% of the typical cost that we've seen paying, through PR firms.
How do you measure the engagement? How do you measure the engagement?
So we track it because we know when you walk in the door, we know when you walk out, we know when that post goes live. Our system is taking a screenshot of that post on Instagram that you're making every 60 minutes. So if a business is wanting it for 24 hours at a time, we're tracking that. And we're only billing because of the fact that that post is live for that amount of time. So it's very transparent. We're trying to create a lot of transparency in an industry like marketing and advertising that very little exists.
I can understand why consumers might do this. I'm just not quite sure why companies would. I can understand you're bypassing traditional channels, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
You're you're encouraging people to put up Instagram posts, et cetera. So I can see the benefit. But does that really mean there's engagement? Or does it just mean you're getting someone else to do your work for you?
No, if you look at the customer journey, it starts with advertising. So you're spending money on Facebook ads, but then you don't know if they actually convert into ever walking in the store. And if they walk in the store, you don't ever know if they actually purchase. And if they purchase, you don't know if they ever give feedback. So we want to track that entire customer journey for the business. And then they can really understand every dollar of advertising or marketing that they're spending.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure to talk. The CEO and founder of Circus and formerly co-founder of Groupon, Stephen George, we appreciate it. Thanks for coming into our studios and good luck with your launch in the UAE.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
The Business Breakfast Nightcap
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Evening, you're listening to the Business Breakfast Nightcap. My name's Malcolm.
One person making news today is making news by being conspicuous by her absence, and that is Brandy Scott. She's going to reveal where she is in a couple of moments' time, but first of all, here's a hint.
Beep, beep. Does it have to be Namui? Beep, beep. Does it have to be mine?
Beep, beep.
Where am I supposed to get it?
Feed me, Simo. Feed me all night long. That's right, boy. You can do it. Feed me, Simo. Feed me all night long. 'Cause if you feed me, Simo, I can grow up big and strong.
You eat blood, Audrey, too, let's face it.
This is where Brandy Scott is today.
Where did that come from?
That's from Little Shop of Horrors.
Okay.
Feed me, Seymour. Brandy Scott, in her own words, this is where she is today.
I'm on my way to the airport, not because I'm running away from you lot, but because I'm going to spend the morning with Emirates Flight Catering, finding out what they're doing to make sure that you get the best possible meal at 30,000 feet.
Take one for the team, Brandy.
Yes. Now, if I'd gone to do that, I'd be taking 10 minutes over. How long is she taking?
She's 4 hours. The full day.
It's a testing session.
She and Joost Heymeyer, I think, basically are just going to go through every different conceivable type of cuisine. She'll have full report on that tomorrow morning on the Business Breakfast. My newsmaker today is Sir Tim Clark, the president of Emirates Airline. And he's been making headlines in, of all things, what are the podcasts that you hear when you're on an Emirates flight? Which, sometimes you listen to for a little while. I don't pay massive attention to it. They're always perfectly pleasant. But this one is interesting because we've been talking about the future of aviation and, in particular, batteries. Lots of battery-powered cars, experiments being done on battery-powered planes as well. This is him in his own words. The question was, will we stick to conventional fuel for planes or, realistically, will we find an alternative?
It's a highly topical question. My own view is that I have to say that I do not foresee in the short or medium term step changes in fuel technology. In other words, there is a lot of talk about electrical powered aircraft. There's a lot of talk about alternative fuels. And yes, technology might take us there eventually with regard to perhaps the use of hydrogen as a main source of power. But electrical power to drive something like a 380 over a 16-hour mission, a 560-ton aircraft flying at 600 miles an hour or nearly 1,000 kilometers an hour on battery power is just not going to work. It's pie in the sky, excuse the pun, to even think about that. We have to improve the way we build aircraft, the way we construct aircraft, the metallurgical stroke composite technologies. We have to improve the fuel efficiencies of the propulsion. And you know something? We've done really wonderful things over the last 30, 40 years in aircraft design, build, construct, and materials. The aircraft are so much more efficient per seat mile, seat kilometer, than they were, say, 30, 40 years ago. And that's improving all the time.
But batteries are, to quote Sir Tim, pie in the sky. Flydubai numbers came out yesterday. On the one hand, it was good news for Flydubai because the first half loss had reduced. It's down 38% year on year. However, it is still a loss of 197 million dirhams. Gaithal Gaith is the CEO of Flydubai, and he's been saying he is very disappointed. He's not putting a positive spin on it, and he says it is not representative of what they expected. Now, when their 2018 full year results came out, he said that they were cautiously optimistic at the start of 2019. He said we'd seen positive results as our routes matured, and during the first few months of 2019 we saw strong demand across the network. However, the Boeing 737 MAX situation hit, and Flydubai has 14 of them that are sitting on the ground. It can't use them. It had more of them on order. And as you mentioned, Malcolm, that was all part of its strategy to do longer haul routes, which are obviously carry a higher price tag.
Bound to bite, isn't it? Got 13 of those planes and plenty on order. I can't remember how many they had. What was it, 27 or something they had on order? Quite a few of these planes. So, it's bound to bite. Because when I've flown to Bangkok, they used to fly the 737 MAX. Likewise to Catania in Sicily. So the longer haul routes, they make good profit on those routes. So you take those out of the skies, of course you're going to suffer. Hopefully this will be solved by the end of the year.
The Business Breakfast Nightcap.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
Good evening, you're listening to the Business Breakfast Nightcap, and I'm Malcolm Taylor. The Asian market's mixed, really, because 70 years since the founding of communist China, but it's all kicking off still in Hong Kong. In fact, we've seen some international companies get sucked up in this. Zara was one, and we've seen other companies, Cathay Pacific, getting involved as well. And Starbucks has emerged as the latest brand to fall foul of the protesters in Hong Kong. This is after a family member of the local restaurant chain franchiser that owns the franchise spoke out against the demonstrators. And multiple branches of Starbucks have now been covered with graffiti over the weekend, as the city has been seeing some of the most intense clashes between hardcore protesters and riot police over weeks. One cafe in Wan Chai, the Wanch, daubed in slogans such as boycott, etc., etc. And they've been smashing windows in Starbucks across the city. So the international brands are being sucked into this. It's not a good look for Hong Kong. We've seen, hotels down 30% in the last quarter. China happy to celebrate its 70th birthday today, but wondering what to do about Hong Kong just across the board. Doesn't want to go in too heavy. Obviously, that would just inflame things. So it's got to have a softly approach. So it's watching and learning at the moment, China.
Shruti Rajendran's with us in the studio, our producer in the absence of Brandy Scott, who is where precisely? What's her excuse this morning, producer Shruti?
She is going to interview or do like an in-depth interview with the Emirates Flight Catering.
So food,
service.
In other words.
Yes.
And I've noticed that most of our outside broadcasts or our visits to companies take, what, an hour?
Yes.
She's there all day.
Yes, so she's getting her hair done. This is in her words. And she's going to get ready to go for the Emirates Flight Catering Service interview.
Was it an all-day buffet or something?
I have no idea.
Is she basically just doing a food tasting thing with Joost Heymeyer?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Happy days. We're reading stock market reports.
Right, we've done everything on the A380. Can we try the 777s now, please?
I was in the meeting yesterday when Maxwell, who's from our digital team, was going with Brandy to film. And he asked, how long is it going to take? And she said, maybe about 4 or 5 hours. And he was like, I was thinking it'd be one. So, we'll see
exactly.
What happens.
Go big or go home.
But of course, Maxwell, he can do with putting a bit of put on as well. I'm sure he'll dive straight in when he gets there.
Probably.
Let's talk about your producer's pick. It is SpaceX. Shruti, what's the deal?
It is. So SpaceX Crew Dragon capsule. Now, Elon Musk says it could be ready to fly NASA astronauts in 3 to 4 months. And this would be the first time that humans have launched to orbit from U.S. soil. And it's almost been over a decade now. But NASA is not that confident that Elon Musk can actually reach this timeline within time. I mean, we remember a couple of days ago when he made the announcement about the SpaceX and, you know, how it's the progress of it, you know, on the 11th anniversary of the first SpaceX. And
the big Falcon rocket.
Yes.
Yes, that's the fella.
That is the one. And now he thinks that it's going as fast as they can, and it's designed to ferry astronauts to the International Space Station, and it will be ready for flight within 3 to 4 months. We can actually have a listen. He's speaking to the CNN business reporter Rachel Crane there.
Most of the work that is required from now through flight of NASA astronauts is a long series of safety reviews. So it's not really hardware related, and it's really going as fast as we can make it go. If there's some way to make it go faster, I would make it go faster.
But NASA are not confident, so they have actually bought seats on the Russian-made spacecraft because they want to send the US astronauts up there.
It'd be a nice touch if Elon Musk put himself on the first flight, do you think?
With the astronauts.
Would show confidence.
As a space flight participant.
Yes, why not? I mean, it would show some confidence, I think.
We shall see. Richard Branson certainly wants to be one of the first up in his spacecraft, for want of a better word. We'll see if Elon is up there as well. Very quickly, Malcolm, you've been looking at WeWork as well this morning. Are they making headlines for the right reasons for a change?
Yeah, sorry, I got so enthusiastic about China on my market minute, became a market 10 minutes. Because China is 70 years old today. We're watching pictures on the telly of military parades, long lines of tanks and sort of formal cavalcades going down the middle of the road as President Xi Jinping is going to present himself to exactly the same place that Mao Zedong did in the 70 years ago in Tiananmen Square. WeWork, we've talked about WeWork over the last few days, really, scrapping its plans to sell shares on the stock market. It now says that they are going to focus on their core business, which means that they've got no plans. The first time I've said they're not going to suddenly turn around in a few months' time and start again. They still plan to become a public company eventually, but this is years into the future now. They've said that we really need to build up, get ourselves working properly as a company and focus on the profit, which is interesting because we've been talking about profit for the last few days. They were founded in 2010. They expanded from a single co-working space in New York to this international business that we see today, operating in 500 locations. They recently renamed themselves the We Company, and they continue to post those significant losses. They've burnt through $900 million in the first 6 months of this year, which is not, you know, it's not profitability. It's a long way from profitability.
It is. And you would say they're not really a startup now. They're a decade old.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. We're back tomorrow at 6 a.m. with the Business Breakfast Breakfast.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.